Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jimmy Floyd in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. And my next guest has done just about every kind of hacking there is, from cracking to phone freaking. He's also been investigated as the world's most wanted hacker by the FBI, just as he investigated the agents on his trail. He's been arrested, convicted, and jailed for 5 years. Now he's reinvented himself as a security consultant, hacking just as he used to, but now he's getting paid to expose his clients' security gaps. And he's written a book about it all. I'm joined now by Kevin Mitnick. He was the world's most wanted hacker when he was caught by the FBI in 1995, and he tells his story in a new book, Ghost in the Wires, My Adventures as the World's Most Wanted Hacker. Welcome to WNYC. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Jamie. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, the book suggests that you are a world-famous hacker. It's written in a very novelistic way. It's a pleasure to read. And when you were arrested, you were also the world's most wanted hacker, as well as the world's most famous. So give an example. Why were you the world's most wanted? What made you so good at what you did?
Well, I guess it's from years of experience from doing this. I was a hacker since I was in high school, you know, since about 1978. And I did all these antics over the years. And at the time, the internet was kind of new. It was kind of mysterious. Not many people understood what, you know, computer hackers could really do. And there was this kind of a scary misunderstanding. So at the time of my arrest back in 1995, I was made the example. And I mean, and one case in point of the fear was during one bail hearing, a federal prosecutor had told a judge that not only do we have to detain Mr. Mitnick, but we have to make sure he can't get anywhere near a telephone, lest he phone up NORAD, whistle into the phone, and launch a nuclear weapon. I mean, that's how crazy it was. In open court, I laughed because I thought this prosecutor has now burned his credibility. And so I figured, you know, I was going to be let out on bail. But the judge bought it hook, line, and sinker, and I was held in solitary confinement for nearly a year.
Wow.
Because of the myth that I could, you know, whistle the launch codes.
Now, you're also famous for not using the information you obtained in hacking. Why not?
Well, it was really trophy hunting. I mean, what my goal was is I wanted to become the best at breaking through security. It was kind of a puzzle for me. And so what I did, which landed me in a bunch of hot water, is I hacked into companies like Digital Equipment Corporation and Sun Microsystems, and I looked at their source code. And the source code is like the secret recipe to the Orange Julius. And the reason I wanted to look at the source code is because I could see developer comments when they fix security holes. I could analyze the code to find security vulnerabilities. And I could even modify the code and recompile it. So if I wanted to insert a way that it could get back in to a computer system, I could do that. And I did all this stuff really to become a better hacker, because to me, hacking was like a huge video game. And for me, it gave me this huge endorphin rush. So it was very, very addicting at the time.
Now, we'll get back to the hacking itself in a moment, but there's also a notion I want to talk about, social engineering, that you write about in the book, where you use trickery or manipulation to get the information you needed from people. Isn't that a form of hacking as well?
Exactly. Well, social engineering came about back in the phone freaking era, and it was about learning about the department, you know, the inner workings and departments at the major telcos, and then posing as fellow employees, so you'd become considered part of the in-group, to get information from the phone company. So it was kind of mixing con artistry and technology, and kind of like how I wrote the book, and I wrote it with Bill Simon, who's a fantastic author, and how we wrote the book is we wanted to make it like a catch-me-if-you-can tale, because that's what it truly was, is because later on, I, you know, for some insane reason, you know, because I would never do this today, is I decided to play cat and mouse with the FBI to see who was smarter. Eventually, they always get their man, but I had a 3-year run with them, And during this process, you know, as they're chasing me, I'm monitoring the cellular communications, not actually wiretapping the voice communications, but looking at who they're calling, who's calling them, their location, and, you know, considering it like an adventure. And I set my mindset at the time is that I wasn't a fugitive, but I was living under a cover identity. And by, you know, by psychologically putting this in my mind, so to speak, it made it easier to become a fugitive because I didn't treat it as, you know, I'm looking over my shoulder all the time. I treated it like I was, you know, in some undercover capacity. And by doing this, it was psychologically easier to go through that.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the evolution of all of this. In 2009, you told Fox News that Obama's BlackBerry is hackable. You know, even though it would be a long shot and the government would come after you. We've got the News of the World phone hacking scandal now. That's something everyone's aware of. So can you give us a sense of how simple phone hacking is?
Sure. Like with the Obama thing, there was kind of a misunderstanding. If he was using an ordinary BlackBerry that you and I can go buy, or that our company issues us, you know, to perform, you know, business duties, that device is hackable. But General Dynamics actually developed a device called a Sectera Edge that I never looked at. That is secure. That is supposed to be secure. I haven't actually tested it myself. So what I was speaking to was the ordinary BlackBerry, not the Sectera Edge, which is supposed to be a modified BlackBerry that the NSA has approved to work with classified information. On the voicemail front, it was kind of funny that you bring that up because about, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago, a reporter from CNET News called me and said, listen, I'm doing this story on this voicemail hacking in the UK. How easy is it for a hacker to break into anyone's voicemail in America? So I said, well, can you give me a few seconds? And then I said, well, do I have your permission to try to hack into your voicemail? And she said, sure. And then I three-wayed in a number of a system that I set up that allows me to do what they call caller ID spoofing. And that's where I'm able to, like, call you, for example, and make it appear as any number I want. So by using this caller ID spoofing technique, I was able to call her number, and I put in the calling number as the same number. So I'm calling her number from her number. And what had happened is it immediately dropped into her voicemail, and we were able to listen to her messages. And her jaw dropped, you know, that, you know, to her it was unbelievable. To me, it was just old news. And that's because of how Sprint, for example, had set up their system, is they look at the caller ID, and if it's the customer, what they do by default is allow access to the voicemail without the PIN code.
And these days, the word hack is, you know, as we've mentioned a couple of times, associated with these scandals in the UK. There's the group Anonymous, which has promised to kill, that's their word, not mine, Facebook for privacy issues. And they are suspected of bringing down the BART website in San Francisco this week. And then you, of course, did your time, and many would say rightfully so. So there's sort of this negative association with hacking. Is that how it always was?
No. In fact, when I was in high school my teacher let me into class and waived the prerequisites because of all the phone tricks I was able to show him that I can do. And in high school, get this is what the ethics were back in 1979, was I was tasked with writing a Fortran program to find the first 100 Fibonacci numbers. And instead, I thought it would be cool to see if I could write a program to steal my fellow students' passwords, not because I wanted to use them, but just to see if I can do it. So I spent so much time working on this program that I didn't have time to finish the assignment. And so I told the teacher, I said, listen, I got kind of preoccupied in writing this password stealer program. Let me show you how it works. He was impressed, and he gave me an A and accepted it in lieu of the Fibonacci assignment. So the ethics taught in high school back when I started this was hacking was cool and it was encouraged.
Yeah. And you know, to that end, you write about going to do a 9-to-5 job and then coming home and entertaining yourself with the process just for the thrill of wanting to learn more. And we mentioned that you never used any of the information. You were famous for that. You never used the credit card information or profited from your deeds, although still it was illegal just in and of itself to hack, and you did your prison time. But there are FBI raids on groups like Anonymous ending
Lil
up with...
Sec.
Yes, right, of course, Lil Sec. But are there... They may be hacking for the thrill of it. Is there some way to put their talents to better use?
You would think so, if they could be redirected. And don't forget, there's different factions of Anonymous and Lil Sec. You know, I think there might have been a small group that started it, and originally it was for hacktivism. They were trying to sell send political messages through hacking, and this is not anything new. I mean, this before this was done through website defacements. You know, people would hack into sites and post a political message. Now they're getting a little bit more, having a little bit more chutzpah, and actually now dumping confidential data. Now, I think there's a lot of, because of all the media attention given to this, I think there are a lot of kids, 16, 17, 18 years old, that love to see the hacks played out in the media, and they jump on the bandwagon because they think it's cool.
So
they like the media attention.
In 30 seconds, or I would say even 10 seconds, tell them what they should do instead.
Yeah. And, I think they need to find more socially acceptable ways to send messages other than, hacking and exposing data of police departments and whatnot.
And I guess in the meantime, they can read Ghost in the Wires, My Adventures as the World's Most Wanted Hacker. Thank you so much, Kevin Mitnick, for being here.
Thank you, Jamie. I appreciate being on your show.
All right. He was the world's most wanted hacker, but he was caught, folks, by the FBI. He's now a security consultant, and he tells the story of his life in his new book. And we appreciate his joining us today. Don't forget, starting right now, it's a free country's politics chat, what it means to be an independent in 2011, whether you come from left, right, or center or elsewhere, especially if you have an independent streak. Join the It's a Free Country politics team and fellow WMYC listeners. All you need is a computer, a love of politics. What does it mean to be independent? It'sAfreeCountry.org, starting right now. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer at WMYC and WMYC.org. I've enjoyed being with you the last 2 weeks. Tomorrow is Friday, a Best of Brian Lehrer show, and Brian will be back Monday. Thanks for listening.